From KTOO, I'm Katie Anastas with a look at local and statewide news. The Alaska Mental Health Trust has awarded Bartlett Regional Hospital and the Juneau Housing First Collaborative more than $850,000 in grant funding. The hospital's funding will support the launch of behavioral health crisis services at the new Aurora Behavioral Health Center when it opens. Jen Carson is Bartlett's Executive Director of Behavioral Health. She says they hope to offer crisis services to adolescents by the end of the year.
Right now, if they need to be admitted, they're put on our medical surgical floor, you know, with minimal interventions. So that's not an overly therapeutic environment for an adolescent.
She says the new space offers a warmer, more calming atmosphere. The grant funding will help Bartlett hire staff and pay for equipment as construction on the building continues. The Housing First grant will help the Glory Hall add 28 new units to Forget Me Not Manor, bringing the total number of units to 92. The facility provides permanent supportive housing along with physical, behavioral, and addiction treatment services. Executive Director Maria Lovishuk says that combination is key to address the root causes of homelessness.
People are not just like this, like nameless, homeless, like individuals. Like they're old people and they all have families and they have a tremendous amount of trauma. And the way to like even begin to heal that trauma is not to like stick them in an emergency shelter. It's to create like dignified, safe spaces. And that is permanent supportive housing. And it really works.
Researchers from the University of Alaska Anchorage found that people who moved into Forget Me Not Manor had fewer emergency room visits and police encounters. They also reported better physical and mental health. Lovishuk says construction on the new units will start in spring. The Ketchikan City Council has voted to cut hours at the town's only 24/7 emergency shelter due to safety concerns from neighbors. The city's annual lease for the shelter, First City Haven, expired in May and has since been month to month. The new lease allows 22 hours of operation per day for the first 6 months. For the second 6 months, the shelter would only be open at night. The decision came during a special meeting on September 5th, after the council heard from nearby business owners speaking about inappropriate activity outside the 54-bed shelter. It's a concern they voiced since the shelter moved into its current downtown location 2 years ago. Sean Heisman owns Bodden Street Brewing nearby. He said the problem is getting worse.
I call the cops a lot more, at least once a week, sometimes twice a day. It has a negative impact on my business. It has a negative impact on my customers. I now have to walk my female employees to their cars at night.
Others spoke against limiting services. Steve Hayburn is the vice president of First City Homeless Services, the local nonprofit that runs the shelter. He's also a probation officer with the state of Alaska. He said there are over 800 unhoused people in Ketchikan, 165 of whom used the emergency shelter through August of this year. Over the same period, the shelter served over 18,000 meals. He said First City's programs help prevent people from sleeping in doorways, parking lots, and playgrounds. He said the shelter not only keeps people alive, it also helps them live better through a work program. He urged the city council not to cut services.
How are you planning to replace 20,000 meals or people be expected to steal from local business to survive? Are you prepared for more camps, an increase in prostitution, sex trafficking, and survival behaviors?
Hayburn said they've heard concerns from local businesses and have begun looking for an alternative location, away from the downtown area. They hope to have that figured out within a year. Some council members voiced concern that more people would be out and about if the shelter were closed. They also discussed the possibility of losing grant funding if services were cut back. In the end, council members voted 4-3 to cut the operating hours of the shelter within the 12-month lease. Besides shortening the hours of operation, the council also voted to move the shelter's entrance to a side door of the building, pending the fire marshal's approval. Alaskans awoke yesterday to the news that the beloved husband of U.S. Representative Mary Peltola was killed after his plane crashed Tuesday night on the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. As KYUK's Francisco Martinez-Cuello reports, Eugene Buzzy Peltola Jr. is remembered for his sense of humor, years of public service, and commitment to family.
No one in Bethel knew Eugene Peltola Jr. as Eugene. Instead, people called him Buzzy, and he is remembered for a life of service. In a recorded statement, Calista Corporation's Vice President of Corporate Affairs, Tom Leonard, said he will be sorely missed.
He really lived some of the most important values that we have in our culture of being a husband, of being a father, and of service to the community.
Buzzy Peltola Jr. was born in Bethel. He is Tlingit and Yupik. His background was in business and local government. But last year, he retired, a pivot to support his wife, Mary Peltola, in her run for Alaska's sole congressional seat. He turned his love for subsistence harvesting into years of public service at the federal level. For more than three decades, he coordinated subsistence management on all federal lands in the state for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Lamont Albertson, one of the founders of the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission, worked with Peltola Jr. to protect salmon in Western Alaska's subsistence lifestyle.
It's just so hard to find the words to describe his intelligence and how intuitive the guy was. He was assertive and he knew how to say the right things at the right time.
Peltola Jr. served on Bethel City Council for 2 years. He worked with Lori Strickler, Bethel City Clerk.
We are deeply saddened by the passing of Buzzy Peltola, who will long be remembered for his kindness, laughter, and stories.
Buzzy Peltola Jr. also worked as the regional director at the U.S. Bureau of Indian Affairs, Alaska office. In a statement posted to its website, the Alaska BIA said, "The tragedy of Buzzy's passing will impact our office and all Alaskan tribes." Condolences for Buzzy Peltola Jr. came from all over, including from members of Alaska's congressional delegation. "It was so easy to see why so many Alaskans called him a friend," said Senator Lisa Murkowski on Twitter. U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan and Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy both said in social media posts that they were shocked and saddened to learn of Buzzy's death. In a statement announcing his death, congressional staff for Mary Peltola described Buzzy as a devoted family man and a person who was obnoxiously good at everything. Staff said he had a delightful sense of humor that lightened the darkest moments. Mary and Buzzy Peltola have a large blended family that includes 7 children. In Bethel, I'm Francisco Martinez Cuello.
Eugene Buzzy Peltola Jr.'s fatal plane crash on Tuesday is yet another point in Alaska's grim aviation statistics. A 2021 investigation from ProPublica and Unalaska public radio station KUCB found that since 2016, 42% of U.S. deaths from small aircraft crashes occurred in Alaska, up from 26% in the early 2000s. Charles Walforth is a longtime Alaska journalist and writer.
I mean, I don't think we ever really want to accept it, though, because we know that there are ways to make aviation safer.
High-profile Alaskans aren't immune, and many political figures and their loved ones have died in crashes. In 1972, a small plane carrying then-Congressman Nick Begich, then U.S. House Majority Leader Hale Boggs, a staffer and a pilot, disappeared in the Portage area. In 2010, Alaska's longest-serving U.S. Senator, Ted Stevens, was among 5 people killed when a float plane crashed north of Dillingham. He had survived a plane crash in Anchorage in 1978 that killed his first wife and 4 others. Walforth says it's dangerous to say this is just a cost of doing business in Alaska and go numb.
Some of these crashes are like markers in our history. I mean, if you think about the Begich-Boggs crash, which really changed the course of history, you know, the Ted Stevens crash, again, just a hugely impactful event.
In 2020, State Representative Gary Knopp was among the 7 people killed in a mid-air collision on the Kenai Peninsula. Walforth says there will always be plane crashes in Alaska, but thinks this may be a good time to re-examine why Alaska has so many. Ballots for Juneau's October 3rd municipal election were mailed to registered voters today. They should arrive in mailboxes soon. There are 3 ways to get ballots back to election officials. First, you can drop them in the mail with postage. Second, starting tomorrow, ballots can be placed in secure drop boxes. One will be at the Douglas Library, and one will be at the Stater Harbor Boat Launch. Finally, starting on Monday, ballots can be delivered to vote centers at City Hall and the Mendenhall Valley Public Library during business hours. You can also vote in person at those locations through Election Day. You can find more voter information, including how to apply for an absentee ballot, on juno.org/elections. And you can find candidate profiles and the latest election news at ktoo.org/elections.